our existing spaceship when we are preparing for our budget limit. Therefore, without wasting any time, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Pat Sibande. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Originally, I'm from Mpumalanga. And the honorable members, to you, before you introduce yourself, today is a little bit hard for me because the man needs to attack the department about the issue of gender. Today we are not gender balance. Then I'm ready to be mustn't because it is against us. And then therefore I'll give it to you to just introduce yourself. But before yourself come back later on, I'll over to you to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Dr. Wagner. I'm from Gauteng, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Professor Chairperson from the Free State and the Wing of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, my name is Zola Mlenzana from the province of the Eastern Cape, member of the committee.
Over to your department, after I come to the staff.
Good morning, my name is Timothy Wangwood, CEO of the Department of National Department.
Good morning, Chair, members. My name is Neville Cheney, the Deputy Director General responsible for strategy and planning.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Wula Rachanga. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for program management in the department.
Good morning, members. My name is Martin Mapisa. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for quality in the department.
Good morning, everybody. Louis van der Walt from the policy unit.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sean Solomon. I'm the Office of the DG and I'm responsible for parliamentary services and state government.
Good morning, everybody. I'm an assistant to the director general.
Thank you, honourable member.
Good morning, Papi Tao, member of the committee representing Northern Cape.
Good morning, everyone. Show your business and content advisor to the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Sepo Makanye, researcher to the committee.
PNG, and our visitors as well, may please introduce yourself. Everybody in this house who are requesting you to introduce yourself, come closer to the mic.
My name is Senator Michael and I'm the monitor with the parliamentary monitor.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, department. My name is Christopher and I'm from Sydney.
Good morning, my name is Toko Mokusho. I'm an ANC researcher. Thank you.
Honorable members, I would use this opportunity to the department to apologize if there is any
Thank you, Chair. Please accept the apology from the Director General. Not being able to come here.
Thank you. Honorable members, as we are heading to the last space for who are left to choose the future and explain Minister and the Deputy Minister of Transport won't be in next week. So they would love to participate with us before they leave because of further engagement from this institution. So they've appealed, they've requested that instead of going away, not being represented next week, it's better to do justice to request to come to be with us on the Thursday. Therefore, today we are going to have the briefing of the human settlement, and then on Thursday we are going to have a budget vote of transport. Without wasting any time, I will request the department to give the briefing.
Thank you, Chair. I will proceed with the presentation. First of all, just a purpose to reflect on what we actually intend to present to the committee. If you would like to inform the committee on the status regarding the technical norms and standards for the housing subsidy market, and then also to present the details of the revision work that we've done up to now. Then we will quickly look at the Southern Cape Coastal Condensation Area technical specifications, and then confirm the current status of the revision of the Norms and Standards project. So in terms of the outline, I will first very briefly reflect on the legislative environment and the provisions thereof, then just to state the current norms and standards, briefly deal with the variation manual, then the Southern Cape Coastal Condensation Area details, the revision project details, the current status of the revised standards, and then a little bit on the unification of norms and standards. If you look at the legislative provisions, Section 3.2 of the Housing Act provides that the Minister must determine national policy, including national norms and standards, in respect of housing development. These norms and standards were then instituted by the previous Minister of Housing, Ms. Manyele, in December 1998. All houses constructed after that date must comply with these standards. Just to note on a point of interest, before December 1998 there were no norms and standards. And you would recall the subsidy at that stage was 16,000. And we saw some weird and wonderful developments at that stage, where the bulk of the money went into the service standard, very little was left for the top structure. So this actually changed the environment quite substantially in December 1998. In addition to the norms and standards, all houses must also, since 2002 April, be enrolled with the NHBRC. The NHBRC has published a technical manual. All the houses that are enrolled with the NHBRC must then also comply with these standards imposed by the NHBRC. And furthermore, all construction work within the boundaries of a municipal jurisdiction must comply with the specifications, norms and standards that are enshrined in the municipal bylaws. So the housing program is also subject to those specifications. Let's quickly look at the current norms and standards, which was revised in 2007, and as we sit here today, currently applies. For water, there must be a single standpipe, first stand, and it must have a meter. Sanitation, a VIP, or alternative system agreed to between the community and the municipality and the MEC. Roads graded or gravel paved road access to each stand. That doesn't necessarily require a vehicle access to each property there. Stormwater lined open channels, and then electricity as a last resort option where big funding is not available. We don't want to keep our townships we develop in the dark, so we will provide some funding for street lighting, high mast lighting, for the area as a temporary measure. Just to confirm that the standards I've just presented to you, if we can go back to the slide, represents the minimum level, and no development can be approved if the standards are less than the standards that the Minister has introduced. Obviously, in most of the cases in urban areas, the standards are quite higher. Second deviation would be that the water and sanitation services in our rural areas, where normal township development is not an option, that is quite substantial from what is happening in the urban environment. services in these areas are being referred to as off-grid. Chair, in this normally has an on-site sustainable solution for a specific area approved by the MEC and the municipalities and the benefits and so forth. In urban areas, most of the services are linked to the reticulating services of the municipality. And I can just confirm that in terms of the breakdown of the subsidy quantum, the amount available for sanitation has been based on the cost of a small bore water-borne sewage system. If you look at the house, the minimum size of the house is 40 square meters of gross floor area. And each house must comprise the following. It must have two bedrooms at least, a separate internal bathroom, with a toilet, a shower and a hand basin. Now, we have changed the specification for the shower floor to include a normal bath trap and raise the floor a little bit so that the people can also do some washing there and perhaps bath a little bit if that is required. The combined living area and a kitchen must have a wash basin, and we currently provide for a ready board electrical installation with one light and one plug. As I've indicated, these are minimum standards. These standards may be exceeded if savings are possible in certain other areas, or municipalities subvent and add some funding, or some donor funding is available, then the services standards may be exceeded, but it may never be less. Any deviation represents inconsistency with the legislative prescripts and ultimately will represent unauthorized expenditure. The subsidy costing, the current subsidy amount, which I will reflect on, has been based on the minimum standards. So we've finely tuned the amounts available. It should actually not be a problem to achieve the minimum standards because we have costed it scientifically. There's just a little floor layout plan. As you can see, this little housing unit has got two doors. And one in the kitchen and one in the lounge. Sometimes it's not feasible to do that depending on the site layout. The two bathrooms and the bathroom layout as well with the shower and the toilet facility and the hand basin. These plans have been disseminated to each of the provinces and municipalities. Now, Chair, to cater for extraordinary development conditions that we find throughout the country, we have introduced a comprehensive policy referred to as the variation manual. This manual is supported by an automatic calculator to aid decision making by the MEC when a project application is being submitted. It caters for all the areas where special precautionary measures are required to ensure that we develop high standard and quality durable products for our people. But the variation manual adds money to the subsidy to make it possible for you to then comply with the requirements of the soil or the topographical conditions and so forth. One of the conditions of the variation manual is, although it provides a decision-making tool, the MEC must be supported, the decision must be supported by technical expertise of an engineer, confirming the condition exists and also that it could cautionary measure design is suitable to alleviate the problem. These are all the areas in the variation manual that currently provides for additional money. Cities, groundwater, erodible soil, hard excavations, dolomite, expansive clay, collapsing sands, compressible soils, mining substance, seismic activity, topographical conditions, locational variation, and a disabled variation, and obviously the SCCA area as well. Now, there may be a combination of these circumstances also prevailing, and then the amounts will be compounded to ensure that you have the correct precautionary measure at a specific location. The most prominent and controversial variation aspect perhaps is the Southern Cape Coastal Condensation Area Verification. If you allow me a little bit time on this, I just want to explain what the variation of the SCCA area actually is. It's a demarcated area with a high winter rainfall and a low temperature combination. In this area, during winter, the temperature internally of the dwelling may drop below the ambient temperature outside. And when this happens, you find that condensation appears on the walls or internal walls of the unit, rendering these walls wet because you get long periods of rain and long periods of cold weather. These conditions are then ideal for what we call mildew growth. And in the mildew growth, you find a life-threatening bacteria that can start accumulating. So it is important that we address this issue. If you haven't seen it before, perhaps in an external building, you will see it as a white, powdery appearance on a wall. Then you know that's mildew growth that you have. So this area commences just above Cape Town. It's located south on the west coast of the Western Cape, along the Southern Cape coastal belt up to into the Eastern Cape coastal region, just north of Bathurst. The area was first defined by the CSIR, and of course a request from the Western Cape government, the CSIR was then requested to redefine the area. What they did is they went into the area and did scientific measuring of the rainfall and the temperatures throughout the winter. And so the CSIR also then adjusted the new boundary all along the mountain ranges of the demarcated area. In that little map, I know it's not very visible, but this is an extract from the housing code. At the bottom, you will see the demarcated area. The map just gives you an indication what the area and how it follows the mountain ranges and the coastal belt. There is, however, a comprehensive list of all the towns falling on the boundary and all the towns falling within the boundary in the code. So there should not be any misconceptions of which townships are affected by this condensation problem. So to ensure that we address this problem, the CSIR was then requested to devise mechanisms to ensure that the ambient temperature in the house doesn't fall below the temperature outside. And these are the variation items then that we've built into the variation manual. Let's quickly look at them. It is A, the installation of a ceiling. Installation of above ceiling glass fiber insulation with a required air gap. Now the current specification for this area is an 80 millimeter mineral glass fiber blanket. The plastering of the external walls of the dwelling. And to finance these items, the variations will calculate the cost. We annually adjust the calculator to ensure that we keep up with the escalation of building costs. And that is the cost item currently available for this Southern Cape coastal condensation area. The ceiling, the glass fiber insulation, plastering, and then we have professional fees as well to ensure that the plans are approved and supervision is properly done. And new investigations are also then finally done. So 12,000, say 13,000 rand available in addition to the subsidy content for the ACCA area. Just to inform the committee that in the variation manual there is the notion that a variation per project may not exceed 20%. This 20% will be calculated excluding the ACCA calculation because of the importance of this variation. So it's not affecting the limitation that has been built into the calculation. If we look at the new norms and standards we have done, Chair, we have finalized new norms and standards for the dwellings to comply with the energy efficient requirements. These requirements were published on the 21st of November 2011 by the Department of the Minister of Trade and Industry. And it's referred to as the National Building Regulations, South African National Standards 10400XA. And it prescribes basically the same measures as applicable to the ACCA area, but for the whole country. The difference being that the Sandstorm 400 requires the internal plastering of the walls and rendering on the outside. The in the Western Cape coastal belt or the SCGA area, the requirement for plastering of the external walls will remain because we need to create a waterproof environment for the building. So that will be the difference if the norms and standards have been approved, that the SCGA area will only entail the plastering of the external walls and the painting thereof. These are the issues. The estimated cost with escalation built into it until 2014 April amounts to 16,636 rand. There you can see there's a ceiling installation, there's an air gap, there's 130 millimeter glass fiber mineral blanket now, not the 80 millimeter one, plastering of the internal walls and rendering on the external walls, and then certain window sizes adjustments with special glazing that have thermal reflective properties. The department also determined the cost for electrical installation. You would recall, if you go back to the slide on the norms and standards, we only provide a ready board electrical installation with a prepaid meter and one plug and one light. We have found during our research that the inhabitants of the house actually deploys quite dangerous electrical connections internally, leading from this one plug a variety of extension cords and so forth, and that's a life-threatening condition. So we would like to propose and then change that and also to have one plug and one light in each living area and so forth through the house with a prepaid meter system added to it. Now, Chair, if you look at the SCCA area or the new norms and standards for SunStand 400 plus the electrical installation, including calculating escalation until April next year, plus quite substantial provision for project management and clerk of works provision, the total cost of the new unit, the top structure, would then escalate to 110,947, as opposed to the current structure of 64,666. This is a slide that gives you a breakdown of the cost of the unit. So what you see in the left-hand column, the first row of figures there, indicates the current cost of a house that we currently build, aligned with the current ministerial norm system. Then you see the energy efficient measures, the electrical measures, and then the total cost, and then totaling to the right-hand corner, 110,947. Now, because of the magnitude of the increase, if you look at the amount, 110 versus 64, the department then developed certain scenarios to present them and make a full picture of what the options are. So this slide is the same slide as before, but the red figures is indicative of where we identify possible savings. In terms of our calculations and investigations, so the following scenarios then were developed. If we comply with the current ministerial norms and standards only, then the cost of the unit will increase from 66 to 77,000. And if you use the current planning regime of the provinces and the current budget available, in that scenario we would lose 22,000 houses per annum if you look at it from a COVID perspective. It doesn't happen that way because planning and implementation takes 2 or 3 years, so there's a softened phase in approach. But if you look at it from a COVID perspective, that would be the implication. If we comply to the SunStand 400 and we take the escalation out, the cost is 99,643, and we will lose 46,000 now. If we comply and we take the escalation out and we don't do the electrical upgrade, then the cost would be 93,794. If we comply, but there's no escalation, no electrical, and we only provide for limited project management fees, then the cost is actually 89,885, which is the most economical option. But sir, in terms of my previous statements on electricity, we feel that it's important that we do upgrade the electrical connection. And that will give you the red one. Compliance to the national norms and standards is SunStand 400 with electrical upgrade. We then exclude the escalation, and we will keep our promise of adjusting and monitoring escalation and adjust when necessary during the year. And we then limit the project management fees. Then the cost is 94,250. And if we go for that option, we will lose about 41,000 houses. if you look at it from a gold perspective. So we've made these presentations to MINMEC. MINMEC has decided at this stage not to complete the decision-making process, not to approve the submission. So we are still have to go back to MINMEC and get this the approval from the committee. Just want to state that some of the municipalities have already started to refuse to approve building plans because of the non-adherence to the building regulations. And then the NHBRC also have problems in rolling out that not comply to the national building regulations. In regard to unification of norms and standards, Chair, it's important that the norms and standards for infrastructure be standardized. We agree with that. But this also applies to the application of the USD. We want the standards not to deviate, but we want the USDG to be applied to generate priority developments as identified by the government. We've acknowledged that the MIC funding for Balkan Connector services has its own set of criteria, and that differs from the criteria that applies to the housing subsidy scheme. But the principle remains the same, that the housing subsidy scheme will finance the internal reticulation services and the house building, and that the bulk funding must either come from the USDG or in normal councils who does not qualify for USDG at this moment in time, the MIC funding must pay for the bulk and connector services. The subsidy standards are however consistent with all the other department standards, e.g. for water supply and sanitation. In fact, by and large, our developments in regard to water connection and sanitation exceeds the standards published by the Department of Water Affairs in the White Paper. It is important to note that flexibility is required to ensure that we address local circumstances and development-specific issues. Also, just to once again confirm that rural areas may differ and that the services may, for instance, be off-grid and on-site solutions, which differ from what you find in the urban areas. In urban areas, we have not deployed VIP systems, not only because of the availability, but because of the requirements, technical requirements for a VIP. It's not suitable in a closely dense development. It doesn't work that way. The house standards remain equally applicable throughout the country, the rural areas, urban areas, and peri-urban areas. Thank you very much, Chair.
Any addition?
Chair, we just want to confirm that we should join the RC of the school and the nutrition
chair. Chair, with your permission, let me begin by apologizing for comments about the committee's budget. And if I have to introduce myself, I'm Sunami Matasi, the Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you. Honourable members, this is a time for you to interact with the presentation. Honourable member, can you vote? Sorry, before any other hand?
In case I change my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, that's quite interesting to listen to the presentation. Thank you, therefore. What I'm worried about is at this stage, if you look in South Africa, we've got a huge backlog in housing. And my question is, I want to know, is it really necessary to supply a house, it is actually four-room houses, and there's already one electricity connection in the house. So for three more connections, we paid more than about 12,000 rand in that area. So that is a lot of money for three connections, extra connections, and the houses is small. To put in three extra connections, it can't be 12,000. I think somewhere there with the calculations, we must look again into it. And I'm very worried. If we are looking into the new norms and standards, is it necessary to have four connections in a house? And at the end of the day, we lost 41,000 houses just to put three extra connections in houses, if I understand you right. For me, this, I think we must look into it again regarding the backlog we have in South Africa. So maybe we can put two connections in a house and we can save much more money and we can build more houses at the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Lenzane.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just two things. One understands that there has been this program. What do you call this program? Of demolition and rebuilding of the structures which are
rectification.
Rectification, yeah. Rectification program, yeah. Thank you. We were told by 2009 that there were 3,000 of subsidized houses in the Eastern Cape and Cape, and I do not have chapters in the fixed number now for each of the programs. That they would undergo structure program just to check how many houses have been demolished as we speak now in the two provinces, and is there any building that is taking place so far? If yes, how many also structures have been put in place? I'm talking about the top structure. But then the second one, Chair, is also based on the remember evidence in fact. The problem mainly was that these contractors would put up these structures and run away with murder, so to speak. Now, does this arrangement of these national norms and standards as contained in the Housing Code include some kind of a service level agreement with the supposed to be or the would be contractors or developers as a way to measure the output and also the manner in which they comply to the set standard? If yes, Chair, one would like to know further that what then would happen in cases of a breach of such. We see now government is moving towards a name and shame kind of project. I thought of that also when it comes to this one. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Member Jacobs.
Thank you. We are dealing with norms and standards. I just want to check. What about the site or the stand? Don't we have norms and standards for the stand or the site? Because, you know, during the past era, people were only given a small portion of land for the site. Now, whilst we are having a democratic government, we are still sticking to that. Is it not necessary that also you need to have norms and standards for sites so that if a person in future has money can be able to extend that house? I think on this issue of norms and standards, I understand we have a director DDG for project monitoring. How are we going to has not led us to talk yet. This nonsense that has maybe because there are certain problems. And there was also somewhere saying municipalities are refusing. I don't know what they are refusing to apply this nonsense or something else. And also the presenter talked about the military. I don't think that is confined only in the Western Cape. In the area where I come from, even in the house where I was staying, you would find this little, this whitish powder on top of the plane. So, but now your focus is only on the Western Cape. What about our other areas? Because normally it happens where there is a Tempe area. So it is not only here in the Western Cape, as you are saying. What about other areas? Also, I just want to check where, I don't know whether this is still being used, this township board, where are they placed? Are they placed in the human settlement or in other departments? Because those township boards, I don't know whether, I understand that the legislation issues will be changed, but I just want to check whether it is placed here in human settlement or in other departments, because I just made a follow-up.
No, Chair, my apologies. you know, that's the problem of being a migrant worker, because now you must deal with the family issues at the same time you must be at work. Without having the benefit of having listened to the issues raised by members, I'll just focus on one issue, which was quite a worrying factor. From the presentation, I hear that there are some municipalities that are refusing to adjust or to adhere to the adjusted norms and standards. You know, my worry is just that there is a high level of political, I don't know whether if it is political expediency or lack of communication or inconsistency within the executive. Because if you say that cabinet has approved, or did you say that? Did I get it from you? Or is it what I thought? Okay. My worry is that last week, Chair, I had the benefit of attending the launch of the renewable energy program in the Northern Cape under the leadership of Honorable Minister Dipuo Peter. And during a keynote address, she made a very profound statement to the masses out there in front of the municipality, mayors, and whoever was there, to say that from now on, moving forward, houses are going to be constructed are going to be in line with the current norms and standards. That's what she said. It's going to be like that. So it's a decision that is going to be implemented. Now, seated here and hearing that there are other municipalities or there are municipalities that are resisting. That is the first point. Secondly, that MINMEC did not arrive at a decision, but instead opted to further engage on this particular matter before any conclusion. And here you have a minister who had already communicated this out there. You know, I can already imagine what is going to happen in the next 6 months. Should a house be constructed in Warrington, in my constituency, where this matter was communicated, what kind of conflict is it going to raise between the community, the local municipalities, or whatever? Because the national minister had said from now on, this is what is going to happen. So, I don't know whether if I got you right, if I got you right, wrong, please correct me, so that I get out of this meeting with a clear understanding of what is it that
steps of my colleagues. You see, what was raised by the last speaker, Honorable Member Tao, is also very touchy in your presentation of slide number 28. So he also indicated that we had decided not to approve the revised norms and standards. Maybe if you can update us that what were the reasons. Because it goes on exactly what Honorable Member Tao was saying, that farmers were just already refused to approve the housing subsidy. I mean, house buildings, plans, and also the NHBRC will not enroll houses. We are talking about deadlocks, but already the department didn't, continue to enroll houses while we're experiencing a very serious shortage of houses. Then also, on slide number 12. With the variations. There's a thing which is worrying me. I don't know, time and again we used to ask a question about the consultation beside the level of MINMEC as a department. What are there any consultation with the local municipalities? Because to me what is worrying me, what was raised by Honorable Member Jacobs, is very disturbing. Whereby I'll put an example, you find that there is an informal, practical example, there is an informal assessment, and then by law, if those people are there, after the period of 2 months, 1 month, you can't just take them out. And then, only to find that in local municipalities, they decide to build houses there, sometimes in the wetland, sometimes in some of these on demand land, etc., as you explained. So, what is the role, therefore, of the department? Because I believe that really a continuous engagement, it will make a difference that the people must be warned not to build houses there, but because of maybe from the pressure from the municipalities, they decided to declare. Because as you were looking at the TV, people have through the day, some people that are fighting for places, etc. At the end, the local municipality decided to demarcate the particular areas to make land for them. Your interaction. Then also, on slide number 5, what is it? From your own presentation, okay, this one goes back to the academic regime which was since 2002. I'm subject for correction. You said this additionally, the legislation provision was put on in 2002. Am I correct or wrong?
The NHBRC.
Yes.
Standards 2002, I believe.
Okay. Now, I'm a little bit concerned that from this information and the last information, how many houses were being enrolled? Because you said it started in 2002, and only now municipalities and MINMEC decided not to honor it. So what was happening from 2002 up to date? Then the last one is slide number 9. On slide number 9, on bulletin number 3, any you indicated that in your own presentation that the enrollment of houses is not continuing because of the dispute of the municipalities as well as in the MINMEC. To me, it is a contradiction because I don't know which one you are referring to, because it seems to be nothing. Therefore, I will suggest that maybe you start to respond to these questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, my colleagues and I will address, but I'll just take a couple of them and we'll pull in Bulelo as well as Louis and COO. Chair, what I need to indicate is that when, in terms of the province and the municipality, at the onset of a project, there's an agreement, there's a development agreement, and that development agreement is based on the norms and standards that's approved at national. So as Louise indicated, we have a minimum standard. So you're not allowed, the municipalities and the provinces are not allowed to build
below
or develop a stand below that. Okay, so that's the minimum. That minimum standard is aligned to the NHBRC Act, so 2002. So anything post that, or there's been changes in laws or whatever the case may be, we've always, as the National Department of Human Settlements, kept abreast of that. So there's that minimum. So you'll see that our minimum standard for a size of a house, as Louis indicated, is 40 square meters. So you cannot build less, but in certain instances you have provinces or you have municipalities that may want to build bigger houses. So for example, the Free State, I think, had that. But that's where they top up. So that's the minimum. In relation to those contractual and those development agreements, they have to comply with, for example, SABS. Okay. Now, what happened on the 1st of April 2012, the National Building Regulations, I'll wait for Member Tao so I can address the issue of Minister Dupour Peters in relation to that. So that's the contractual arrangement. Anything below that, anything that's outside of that is not, cannot be approved, and there can be no payment. If there's a payment that gets take place, or there's an inspection that gets done, it then becomes an issue of illegality or in fact, maladministration. So that's quite strictly enforced. In relation to the issue of the townships board that was raised, the select committee members, Chair, you will know that the spatial planning land use management bill is in the process of being enacted, and that will then place the responsibility for all planning and regulatory responsibilities between the municipality and the provinces. That's in terms of the constitutional court. I remember that was one of the reasons why that happened. But those regulations are being put in place together with the Act by Rural Development and Land Reform. So that will develop. That will provide the entire framework for planning, for all the regulatory. The building regulations, as we sit now, that responsibility sits with DTI, and whatever DTI puts in place, we then have to comply. I think the point that Member Tower raised, 1st of April, the new building regulations came into place. Now that building regulations places, and I think it's the point that's been made around Minister Dupour Peters, that we've got to comply for all houses, irrespective of whether it's a subsidized house, whether it's a high-end, whatever, everyone in South Africa who built a house post 1st of April 2012 has to comply with a minimum set of norms and standards in relation to energy efficiency. And that is what the department has put forward before MINMEC. any non-compliance that's outside the norms and standards, either in terms of building regulations, materials, remember materials has to comply with SABS, your local authority standards in terms of building inspectors, anything of that sort, does the house doesn't get approved, the services don't get approved. And there's various stages of inspection that does get applied. I'm not sure who.
Thank you, Chair. I want to go back to the question about NMEC, why NMEC hasn't approved this regulation. And I want to link it to the point about municipalities refusing. In fact, it's the other way around. Let me start with the municipal one. Municipalities are refusing to approve building plans that don't comply with the national norms and standards. It's not like they are refusing to implement the new regulation. They are refusing to approve plans, building plans that don't comply with the new regulation. So municipalities are ready to implement, but they're saying if you don't comply with the new standards, with the new regulation, we are not going to approve those building plans. Remember, building house plans are approved by municipalities. I think that's the first point that I want to stress. The MINMEC deliberations, the concerns of MINMEC are exactly about your concerns, the concerns that you are raising. We've got targets for ourselves. We've already set targets to deliver an X amount of dog structures and an X amount of set aside. And the question is, what will this do on our target? What will be the impact of implementing this particular regulation on our target? And that's the challenge that we make is faced with, because if you look at the cost of the new standards, it means that you're having a higher product, a quality product, but it comes at a premium, which means that it's going to push down the numbers that you want to achieve over the 8-year period. So the MINMEC, the MEC, the National Minister, and all the people who sit in MINMEC, they're concerned about how to implement this without making a big impact on the target set for the 5-year period. Remember, we've got specific targets, we've got outcomes in targets, and if you increase the cost per unit, then it means that the number of units are going to go down. That's the main concern that MINMEC is concerned about. All of the MECs, unanimously, they are of the view that this has to go ahead. The question is more about operationalizing this. The principle is sound, because even the minister made it very clear last week that even if you have few units, fewer quality units, it's better than to just change the numbers. But again, there is a balancing act there, because we've already set targets for ourselves. We're now in the middle of the planning cycle in introducing standards and norms. So the principle is sound. I think all the MECs have agreed that we have to go ahead. The question is, how do we implement it without pushing the numbers down? Then there was another question about the mildew and the SSCE. It's precisely for that reason why the SCCA is now going to be implemented countrywide. In the past, we were only targeting the coastal areas from Southern Cape, certain parts of the Eastern Cape, all the way up to the northern part of Cape Town. In fact, Saldanha Bay Municipality was complaining vehemently over the last 2 years about the fact that they are not included. They're also part of the coastal area and they're experiencing some of these challenges, but they're not part of the SSCA. So the new norms and standards, if you look at them, my colleague there, the point that he's making is that it's going to cover the whole country. Currently, it's only covering certain parts of the Eastern Cape, the coastal area in the Western Cape, but not the whole of the Western Cape, because Saldanha is not part of the SSCA. But the new norms and standards would mean that the volcano will be covered, if I'm correct, if I'm wrong. So it makes perfect sense, because mildew is everywhere, as you make an example, that you don't stay in coastal areas, but you do experience authority across the board, not only in the coastal area. The question about the rectification, I don't know if my colleagues do have the figures at this stage. I wanted to ask my colleague from the Eastern Cape, I've already typed some tariff department in Eastern Cape to give us the exact figures. I am aware that in this current financial year, we have put 10% aside for rectification, and there is an X number of units that will be rectified in this current financial year. Last year, rectification was done as well in the Eastern Cape, I think in KZN, but we'll forward those figures, those exact figures to you. We don't have them right now. There was a question about the service sites, and I think we need to answer it. Yeah, okay. I'll hand over to the CFO. Thanks.
Chair, with your permission, I just want to add, on top of the concerns that have been raised by NUMMEX, that we as national, and in order for us to also confirm to conform to the normal standards, we have approached National Treasury on the issue of the difference between the current subsidy and the subsidy to be. And Chairperson, you will note that because this actually came at the time when the budget has actually been approved by Minister himself. But on the basis and on the simple basis of the fact that the budget is already in line with the business plan and what the Changana has indicated to say, the concern has been around the dropping of the numbers. But because of the fact that we want to confirm to this, National Treasury has been approached, and that kind of an option will be put into our submission for the medium term. And essentially what we're saying is that should we win with National Treasury, the implementation will kick off as soon as possible. It's not that National Department is not implementing the normal standards. However, because of the concerns, like Mr. Funeval has indicated, we want to close the gap to that effect. Just thought I should.
Just by the way of maybe closing the gaps where my colleagues did not cover, those questions are covered so far. I would like to speak about the connections, the one connection versus three. Minister Dipuo Peters and her department formally approached our department precisely with such because of this concern, because we bring one plug, one light, but the house is four rooms, and poor people who are not licensed, who are not skilled, then put connections themselves to other rooms, then there's a question of safety. So you go to an average house, you find loose cables, like illegal connections. And this is the Department of Energy has raised that with our department formally. And we have a task team where we are serving, where together we are determining this to come and comply with the standards. So the question of Minister Peter is in line with what we are doing. We serve in the task team jointly with our colleagues within that department. So it is mainly the question of safety. It's not the question of mainly how many blocks and the cost. It is the question of safety from that department. And we are addressing it within the this context. What is also left by my colleague maybe is the NHDRC was explained, but NHDRC is also a consumer protection act of our department. Therefore, all the home builders are registered with NHDRC. Hence, any other shortage of work or any other comeback, then the department, on behalf of the beneficiary, is able to claim from the NHDRC to rectify that sewage work. Such that now, with the existence of NHDRC, all the houses that are built since the introduction of NHDRC, by law, we should not have comebacks because NHDRC should be able to rectify those. And maybe the big issue for us would be houses that were built before 1994, which were not registered with NHDRC because it was non-existent at the time. So I should just emphasize that. I believe the rest of the issues have been answered, including the IDP process, the consultation, and so on. Thank you.
of the new norms and standards, they are justified, and they are for a good cause. Also, members, they are worried about the rectification program. If we implement the new norms and standards, we can see that in the long run, there will be no need for rectification. Also, above all, as a country and as a sector as well, there is a need for us to comply with all the building regulations. We cannot have the standards and the regulations, and then as a sector and as government as well, then we go and not comply, because that will also just raise other issues. The only challenge that we have at this stage, like the CFO has put it, is that we have already set ourselves the target. Now, the issues that we need to work out as a sector is to how best can we make good of the backlog that we have. But the sector is acknowledging and they are appreciating the new norms and standards that need to be implemented. With your permission, Chair, I think we move it this one.
There was a question about the CERS level agreements, and if whether contractor do sign the CERS level agreement with the developers. If you look at the grant, in most cases, you will find that provinces are the developer. In some instances, municipalities are the developer. They manage the entire procurement process for professional services, for professional consulting companies, but also the contractors. So the contract management is managed at that level. But I think this is linked to the question that my colleague, Mr. Mapisa, has raised about, has responded to about NHPRC. All the contractors in the sector, in terms of the law, they need to register with NHPRC. And the projects that they are working on must be enrolled with NHPRC. So you've got two layers of control. You've got the NHPRC requirement, and then you've got the provincial or municipal contract management. And if contractors fail to deliver on the specified contract, then the contract is either terminated or the contractor gets registered. There are contractors who are listed in the National Treasury in the data of the blacklisted service providers. But developers are managing those contracts. The only area which has been a concern over the years is the area of PHP, what we call people housing process project. Because in PHP, the PHP started as IMIMA, or self-help projects where people come together to build houses for themselves. In that case, those particular projects or houses were not required to be registered NHPRC, because people are coming together to build houses and they can do this. But we find out that there is a challenge there. In fact, we picked up that some of the contractors who are not doing well in the contractor build or NHPRC space are operating in that space. And the National Department last year took a conscious decision that all housing projects should be enrolled with NHPRC. PHP or no PHP, all housing projects are now required by law to be registered with NHPRC, and that's intended to ensure quality. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, let me give you round number two.
My question has not been
answered. Okay, I'll give it a chance.
No, I'm just reminding them that they might respond to my question.
I'll give it. Yes, I'll give an opportunity. So we're still got enough time. Let's start to honorable member, Mr. Tisha.
Chair, I don't agree with your approach. Because my question was on the first round. Now we are getting to the second round. So let them respond to that and then we'll come to the second round. I asked them about why don't we have standards for sites or stands nobody responded to that. And also on the issue of township board, and nobody responded to that.
Followed by Mama Picha, followed by Honourable Member Mapicha, Honourable Member Hunevat. Yes, that line. Mama. You will start by responding to that question, followed by Mama Mapicha.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 14, I see that the department considers the high winter rainfall combined with low temperature in some areas around the Western Cape. But then I just want, and that's resulting to mildew. And I just want to ask if we ever, as department, think of the opposite of this. Because Western Cape is down here, and we have that assessment where the temperatures are very, very high, and winter rainfall very low, leading to people living in these 50 square meters outside the house during the night, because those buildings are very, very hot, leading to them start living a night life. They are active during the night, and during 8 a.m. it's then that they can sleep a bit inside the house because it's a bit cooler. Are we doing justice to the sizes of the house, the minimum? Because most of the municipalities resort to minimum. It's seldom that you find them being bigger than 40 square meters. And such lifestyle leads to crime and drug and substance abuse and alcohol, and leading to ill health like TB, because they are drinking due to the heat that is within the house that we built for them. Comparing Mosena and Western Cape, they are two different temperatures from January to December. Then is there something that can be done when we build this house to reduce the heat? Because the heat there, most of the time, is 14.5 degrees Celsius. And from there, I survive because I have the aircon. Without an aircon, you don't need to go outside if there's no electricity. You go and stay outside the house, even if it's not an RPP, because it's too hot. Is there something that you're thinking to assist when you build this house? Because they cannot even afford the electricity to run a van or a car. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. It still remains quite interesting to listen to these things. And for me, it is the vision government has, and also the department is going hand in hand, is to see that the poorest of the poor people get a roof on over their head. And I think that is the main thing. Now we come with electricity. I haven't got a problem with that. If you issue the house with plug or a light in a house, we must remember and keep in mind that is the poorest of the poor. That is people who've got nothing. And now, and all that is people who have income under a certain amount. That is the people who qualify for the RBPLs. And now we begin to put some luxuries into the house. And I said that because with our oversight visits, we saw RDP houses, and the shack right next to the house who have illegal electricity. And where are we going to stop at the end of the day? Next time you're coming with a new norms and standards and say, but the shack must also have electricity. And in the places where we visit, the electricity lines, it is flat, it's lying on the ground. What about that? Now we're complaining about what is going on in the houses. But what about what happened into the streets from the poles? How many people get electricity illegally from the poles into the houses? Is that not dangerous? So we can argue around this thing, but I'm worried because we must build quality houses. I agree with that. We must give the people good houses. But with all these other things coming up now, we are going to build less houses, and we will now never reach that big amount and service the backlog. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next, Honourable Member Tao.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think we need to be clear of what is it that is happening here. We need to be clear of the agenda of government or the agenda of the country. It cannot be that we can be sitting and using words such as luxuries if in actual fact the intended or the objective of raising the bar is in actual fact to improve the life of ordinary South Africans. If the intention of increasing or improving the bar or raising the bar is to create a safety environment for the ordinary South Africans, it can never therefore be reduced to luxury. And therefore, Chair, I think that is one area where we need to commend the department to be moving in the right direction by ensuring that the inequality within the South African society is lessened. We close the margin, we close the gap. I know I might differ to a great extent with the Honorable Groenewald in so far as ideological posture is concerned, but I'm sure you would agree with me when I say, by nature, human beings are unequal. Therefore, it was never wrong for one of the greatest philosophers to have said, from each according to ability to each according to need. That was an acknowledgement that there are those that ordinarily would not have access to certain services or to certain things that those with the greatest of ability will have. Therefore, how do you then locate humanity within the center of development? It can only happen through a caring government that says, here are our people, they are consistently exposed to these dangers, they are consistently exposed to this kind of conditions that are not geared at improving the lives of themselves or their children moving forward and creating a future that is non-racial, non-sexist, democratic and prosperous. Because this is the beginning of prosperity. You talk about prosperity, where does it begin? Where you lay your head, where you relax. Because at that point, once you are safe, once you are comfortable, once your kids are comfortable, then you start getting out of that house, being comfortable and therefore making a contribution that is constructive in society in general. So therefore, I would not really want to say that the department is wrong in moving in the direction that they are moving. Instead, I would rather say, at what point do we ensure that our provinces have a buy-in, our municipalities have a buy-in, and there's a clear understanding, of course, yes, also the general community, because these things have got serious implications. Once we would want to come up with issues that would seek to improve the lives of our people, there are also a counter to that, because then less houses are going to be built,
because more money is now going to go into this environment that is sought to be created. I think that's where we need to put our energy insofar as our thinking is concerned, to say, how do we assist the department to resolve this problem? How do we ensure that at the cluster level, that there's a buy-in, the FFFC or whatsoever, how do they respond to these kind of challenges that our people are faced with, together with Treasury and so forth? Of course, looking at the current financial and global situation, its implications also on the economy of the country, on the fiscals and all those sorts of things. How do we then balance these things? To me, that is more important change. Hence, I raised the issue of expediency at times, where you find that there's no consistency in the form of communication coming from the executive, which is very much important, because that can also, it's also a recipe for crisis, an unnecessary crisis as well. So it is important that kind of an area is properly coordinated. Thank you very much.
Before I come, see your hand.
Yeah, Chair. I don't think Congress Darrow should have elaborated on this. We should have spelled it for policy debates. That's where you had to explain to Honorable on what you are saying. Also, I think I'll respond on that with a debate. I know you are going to raise it next week, so I'll respond to you. Because I think what on earth are you saying? These are minimum standards that our people should have them. So there's nothing wrong if we are raising them. But I'll come to that. Chair, the other issue that I want to bring up is that NHDRC, is this structure effective? Because now, you are on a ratification program. Because if NHDR was there and doing its duty, you won't be doing what you are doing now. Because you are saying you claim on the defects that were there. But it is not the NHDRC which is proceeding with a ratification. It is the department itself. So that's why I'm saying whether this structure is effective. And maybe we need a structure that will cut across all spheres of government, from province to local and so on, so that they must be able to monitor them. And also, you talked about the municipalities are refusing to approve the plans. Who is submitting this plan? Because I was thinking maybe it's the standard plan which is submitted to the municipality to build houses. But now if it is refusing, who's making the submission? If we can get a response on that. But Chair, I'm still, I'll ask questions after I've received the response to Township Board.
Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, what am I going to allow you last questions?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. No, it's not in your question. It's only one part of my question which was answered, the last one. I'm now reminded by this other question by Honourable Chair also. The question I asked about the service level agreement in that has been raised between the department and the would be contractor. That question was not responded to. I could ask as to if there is that, what would then be the effect, or what steps would be taken if they are breaching of such? That was not responded to.
Right. Nevertheless, I
wanted
to add one or two. You see, if you can take us on board that in terms of norms and standards, what is the relationship with the rural subsidies in terms of the then also, on top of that, maybe to link it with the finance-linked individual subsidies programs, which is intended with addressing the needs of the gap market. You still remember we had a problem with the partition of the gap market. So, what is the relationship with the Northern Standard? Is it applicable to all those to them also as well? Or what is it exactly? Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, as I indicated, the one thing that we need to understand is that the national building regulations apply equally to all. So if you live in Sandton, it covers all house construction in South Africa. So irrespective of where you want to build or construct, you will have to comply with that. So that's the minimum in terms of building regulation. In relation to the subsidy or subsidized housing, there is no discrimination. So if you stay in a rural area and there's a state money that's getting used, you have to apply those standards. So the standards that we've put up here is applicable to rural, is applicable to affordable as well. So the list of the gap market, it's all there. In relation to the standards for the servicing of sites, what happens is that, again, it is regulated in terms of the municipal as well as the servicing standard that applies in relation to what the engineering approval standards are. So, for example, your designs have to be approved by the municipality. It has to be consistent to material use. So those standards are applicable and are contained in the National Housing Code. So the standard that gets applied for servicing of stands is the same. So in relation to the department, it speaks about waterborne, and I think the applicable standards. There must be a bus route and open water channels. So that standards are there. So there's a standard that's applicable all that. In relation to the township's board, Chair, as I've indicated, pre-94 you had what was called township boards. Post-94, given the Municipal Structures Act, the Systems Act, those responsibilities were taken up by the respective committee systems. So in the municipalities, you would have a portfolio committee on planning that dealt with all the regulatory and planning approvals. What happened was that there was a township appeals board that was set up in the provinces, and members of the committee will remember that there was a court case in relation to that. The Constitutional Court then ruled that all matters related to planning within the municipal space is the responsibility of the municipality. Hence, we've had the SPLUM, which is now at a point where it needs to get approved by Parliament, both Houses of Parliament, and once that gets done, the regulations and the necessary regulatory and approval bodies will be applied there with the necessary oversight from provincial and municipal. So all local spatial planning regulatory matters falls within the ambit of the municipalities. In relation to the energy efficiency standards and as raised by the member, the point of the National Building Regulation that came into place on the 1st of April was exactly to deal with that. How do you deal with a house that gets too hot during in summer and gets too cold during winter, and those temperature fluctuations. So the standard that we need to comply with, which government has adopted as cabinet did through the DDI, is to ensure that energy efficiency usage and application also gets applied in subsidized housing. Yeah. So So, you know, there must be minimum standards of thermal quality, usage, all those kind of things. So to prevent the kind of differences that you have.
Yeah.
And as DDG Changana has raised, the SCCCA is applied across the board. Previously it was only applied in the southern areas, but we've now, the point is mildew across everywhere. And obviously what we want to achieve through this new standard is that those wild and disparate fluctuations in temperatures won't occur in the houses that we construct on behalf of households using state subsidies. That's the point. On the first as well, Chair, as we've indicated, the standards and the building regulations in relation to that applies as well. So I just to inform members, there's three inspections that takes place. You know, there's municipal inspection that takes place. There's the provincial inspection because the provinces have inspected, and then the NHBRC also, because we pay the NHBRC from the subsidy, we pay them an enrollment fee. They also have to inspect that, and that applies to even the affordable housing and gap market houses that we construct. I think the point that we need to be able to understand is that yes, there have been issues where, you know, post the period 94 to 2002, we had these, you know, it was a bit of a free-for-all, if one could say. With the advent of the 2002, when Minister Mahanyelet activated the NHBRC, we've gotten better at it. And I think, you know, we all have to take credit for it. Yourselves, together with us, and we've highlighted this, our quality processes across the board. Because remember, we're also not the Department of Human Settlements only for poor households.
Mm.
We're the Department of Human Settlements across the board.
Mm.
So those standards, the NHBRC standards, the SABSS standards, the National Building Regulation standards, gets applied across the board.
Yeah.
And I think just to address the issue on the NHBRC, you'll know that we did have certain challenges in relation to the institution. The minister has reconstituted the board. We've got a new CEO. During the course of this year, we've given them an additional amount of money to beef up their inspectorate, and I think it's probably about 400 new inspectors that they're going to employ and train across the country. So our compliance and our oversight is improving. But I think, you know, it's the question we always ask. You know, sometimes as government, we've just got to ask, so where does the public's got to come to the party as well. You know, there needs to be a respect for what we do as government, and not, you know, and that kind of quid pro quo, that we can't always be wanting to cut corners when it comes to government, and we shouldn't. And I think we need to just strike a balance between that compliance. Thanks, Chair.
I'm going to ask my colleague Dorian to come back to the question about services, which you've asked, and government answered part of it, and I think you're going to answer the other part. And I'll come back and to you, Chair, and answer the question about the service level agreement. And there was a follow-up question on ratification as well.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, currently there is no national norm for the stand size. And Chair, there's a good reason for that. It's actually not feasible and practicable to institute a national norm for the stand size. Each area is designed by the town planners, and each layout is different to suit the specific circumstances of the specific area. And therefore, the sites and their sizes vary tremendously. In regard to integrated development that we pursue in our urban areas, we would like to cater for the broad spectrum. So there's bigger sites for the more affluent people, and smaller sites for the middle income group, and perhaps smaller sites for the subsidy houses. I think it's important to note that if you do your cost calculations, one of the main cost drivers of the stand cost is the width of the street front of the site. The wider the site front in the street, the more expensive the site, because the longer the services cost for that specific site actually is. And therefore, what we would like to see is that each area is designed with the people, with their consent, that everybody understand the cost drivers and they can make informed decisions. The other important issue in terms of the thermal performance standards is that your layout must be to such extent that you can orientate your house properly on the site, so you have your knock of your roof, sun north orientation, otherwise the thermal performance will also be tarnished to that effect. So we advocate that the designers stick with the red book for township services and layout, and we're happy with it. We will revise the red book in a not too distant future, but that's the response in regard to the stand sizes. It's very important that we note that the cost of the stand is determined by the layout of the township. If you would allow me, sir, I just want to indicate that the NSBRC linked to the rectification program, we must just be clear that the rectified houses that we are talking about have not been enrolled with the NSBRC. They were built prior to 2002 April, on which date the NHBRC warranty scheme dawned on the subsidy scheme. And therefore, after those that date, the NHBRC is responsible to rectify the house in terms of their warranty scheme. Madam, I just want to confirm that the measures that we have designed for the CAN 10400 energy efficiency standards will have an effect on the thermal performance of the house. The houses in Limpopo will be much cooler in summer and much hotter in winter. And we solve that problem by the institution of these measures. In fact, they are better than the SECA measures because of the mineral wool blanket is now 130 millimeter and not 80 as in the SECA. So the rest of the country will benefit from these measures. Thanks, Chair.
My last question was the SLP. It's your question about the service level agreement. I think we tried to answer the question. Developers in this case, the responsible implementing agencies, if you like, are provinces. In some provinces, like in the Western Cape, you will find that the implementing agencies of developers, sometimes you use that word very loosely, it's municipalities. They then contract with the contractors themselves, and there are clear guidelines, some of the CIDD guidelines on contracting, and they are there and they are known. So the contractual arrangement is between the province and the contractor. When the contractor has failed to meet his contractual obligations, the processes that are followed, and there are instances where contractors were blacklisted. We are aware that there are also instances where the contractual arrangement is done through the PHP program. The PHP is the People Housing Process Program, where the department is not involved in contracting with the contractor. It's the communities and the association who are responsible for the contracting with the contractors. And in those instances, you find that the contract management capabilities are not there. I think the biggest criticism against government in some instances is that we don't do well in contract management, managing those contracts. But I think we do have a measure in place where it NHBRC contract or related project. If it's a PHP, because it's communities coming together to build houses for themselves, and where they don't have the skills, they go out and get a contractor, a community developer to build for them. I think it's in those areas where contractual issues still have to be checked up a little bit. But if it's a contractor built, it's an NHBRC related contract. We follow strictly the conduct of the CIDP contractual guidelines. Thank you. I hope I've answered the question.
No follow up.
It's appeared that Mr. Zulu is not in. This is not the first time that I'm asking this question. And if you remember, Chair, I asked the question. Does the department have teeth to bite? Do you remember? because I raised it deliberately. The mess, I'm using that word deliberately, the mess that the department sees itself in terms of the poor workmanship is concerned, is not your mess at the level of national. I'm not by the way. It is a mess that you explain happening down there. But now when it comes to ratification, it becomes your responsibility at this level. After having realized that Ahmad, after some time, this type of an affair happens. The ratification chairperson, it's a policy matter. As far as channeling the funds, because my understanding as far as the ratification is concerned now is that the funding for such a project comes direct from national. I would say CFO to be corrected if I'm mistaken. Because it was your decision at this level where you decided to vote for this particular fund that they have to this happen with time frame of course. That's why I was asking. I was asking that question deliberately. In my own constituency, I know that a sizable number of houses have been handed over. Work is being done. But one had expected that when you come to this kind of a meeting, you are able to say to us, as the people who are coming from those provinces, this is the amount of work done in that particular province. For accounting the voters, because I believe, Chair, it is the national department's prerogative to from time to time check as to how far a province is in terms of this project, because this is their thinking. It is not the province's thinking that there should be this project ratification. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, Chair, mine is a follow-up question on the issue of township board. I'm just worried if the DDG says there was a court case which said planning should be done at municipality level. I agree. Earlier, that was not done. The municipality would do the planning, but would make an application to the township board for approval. Now, who's making the approval now? Because you can't leave it. We can't leave that to municipality on its own, because that's why you find that they are building on wetlands, they are building on dolomite areas. Who has to check on that? And also there was this issue of parks, whereby right now people are just building houses in parks. Earlier, if you want to use a park, you have to apply for rezoning. So where is that now? It is put in which area? That's why I'm asking you on the issue of the township board. Who's now responsible for that? You can't leave it to municipalities alone.
The other members are now in the when we were open over the camp there, but I need to raise something about the issue of food during the meeting. Said foods. Honourable Member Dawu.
No, my apologies, Chair, when you with regard to the issue of the phones, I should have started by bringing it to attention. I do have a crisis that I'm managing at home. the NHPRC, you know, there's something very interesting that is happening right now. Houses are being constructed, people are renovating their houses and all this. There's a mushrooming of contractors left, right, and center. To what extent does the NHPRC really have control over this? I know it might be, it's an opportunistic question, let me put it that way. I just thought that I must just throw it in, because I know of a friend's house which has been constructed by a contractor. Shoddy workmanship, and the man is gone. My poor friend went to NHPRC to lay a complaint. He's not registered with the NHPRC. So what recourse do our people have? Because it is there, it is happening, it is happening. We cannot close our eyes and believe that it is not happening. The second issue, Chair, on a lighter note to Mama Pija. Being from the Northern Cape, with the similar conditions that you are faced with, I used to stay in a shack, Mama. And my shack was the coolest of all, just through innovation. Fingerty box and ink and all those sorts of things. It was the best so far. So I hear that the department is trying to be innovative and so on. Thanks.
Alright, honourable members, before I wanted to add one. Honourable members, I wanted to appeal. You see, there's nothing wrong. You know that your responsibility is so huge and we are the smallest in numbers in terms of numbers in this house. But we must make sure that when we address the issues, we must put them in silence and address it, not to disturb. You can make it on, and then we start to talk outside, not inside.
Okay.
Please, that is an option we want to do. There's nothing wrong. We know that we are committed with your topic. But even the let's come back to the department. Department, you see, if you recall, there was a question which I asked the owner about the issue of interaction or communication. That besides the issue of MINEC, I think MINEC, that is an arrangement of the ministerial arrangement. And I don't think that you responded to that one. How do you deal, and what other measures are you doing in terms of communicating with the provinces? I even put an example that it might happen that sometimes that we find that in terms of the informal settlement that people put themselves are even set or dynamite or wetland or whatever, and then only to find that after several times, and then those people the municipality started to give them permission to start houses. Because my legal understanding, if we talk about human settlement, we speak about something else, not the door piece which were there in the past. We are talking about the thing which is planned, which is going to be able us to develop it in the near future, which is also won't be expensive. I can't put my heart on the top of the rock expecting that it must be developed. So we know that we have a lot of sectorals within the communities which need to be involved. As Rob Jacob said, I alluded to that. Some of the things we wanted to reserve before. May you please assist me on that one. Honorable Madawu, come back.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. In relation to the issue around municipal approvals and applications, what the Municipal Systems Act and planning sort of governance processes is that a municipality has to put in place certain committees and systems, checks and balances. Now, one of the issues that one finds, for example, in a municipality is where a municipality is the developer, it makes an application to itself for township approval. Township approval, as we sit now in terms of dispensation, gets approved by the municipality. But in approving those townships, or a rezoning application, or whatever the case it may be, you know, change of land use, or whatever, it has to comply with a number of pieces of legislation. So, for example, if in having a township approval, they must make sure that they determine the flood line. So in terms of that, they're not allowed to develop within the flood line. If it's
a wetland or endangered or sensitively environmental area, application and approval must be made to province and the national department in certain instances. So for example, where you want to convert agricultural land, it has to be approved by the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. There's a special application called a Section 14 application. In relation to dolomite, in all instances, one has to conduct a geotech investigation, assessment, and if there are certain geotechnical considerations that come up, those the plans and the design of the foundations must be approved. So it's not, I think it's not a willy-nilly issue, but in terms of the land use management bill that's soon to be act, there are a number of checks and balances that will be put in place. But I think the point that we need to remember is in relation to environmental legislation, it's the provincial MEC, but ultimately the national minister. In relation to geotech, it's your building regulations, it's your engineering design. The same thing with the whole range of the other instances. Sorry, chaps. In relation to the, I'm sorry, I just want to get the questions. In relation to the methods of communication with provinces and municipalities, Chair, we've got a substantial number of forums, statutory by nature, but also subject to intergovernmental relations. So, for example, we've got a mandatory technical MINMEC, we've got national task teams, we've got policy research task teams that looks at policy, that looks at regulation, that consultation. But in relation to communities themselves, if one goes to the National Housing Code, there's statutory steering committees that have to be set up. That consultation, I think Louis referred to it. You know, that there has to be consultation that takes place where a development takes place. So the beneficiaries and the households that are affected have to form part of that steering committee. The social compacts that have to be developed. So that consultation, but the other important thing to note is that in relation to what we get approved and what you will approve next week, for example, in your budget, those projects and those programs must be located within the IDP of a municipality. You know, it gets extracted from the IDP, it gets put into the provincial growth and development strategy, it then comes back to the department. So that line of responsibility and ensuring that whatever project comes out has to be based within a ward, goes into the council, comes into the province, then gets submitted to the... And that line of and we follow that quite religiously, and it's something that gets applied. Otherwise, we would be found wanting. Chair, I hope I've covered that. I think the CFO has a couple of things. Chair, just on the other issue, you know, one of the issues, and I think it's Member Tao's point, you know, there's also a need for us to be able to, and I think, yes, we raised this issue around communication and also marketing of what we do. So you know, the issue is, and it's surprising, I was asked the same question on Saturday. What happens when a developer who's not registered gets employed? Where's the role and responsibility? You know, I mean, you could say to your friend, but did you not know that all building contractors have to be registered with the NHBRC? And your friend's probably going to say to you, well, how was I supposed to know that?
Now, he told me so.
Yeah. You know, so Chair, it's a question of, I think in relation to education and public awareness campaign, I don't think one can say that we're doing enough. And we've obviously got to be able to improve it. But one of the things about building contractors, we've gone through, and the your municipalities. Municipalities also have a responsibility to inform. So, like I indicated, you know, there are some weaknesses in the system, and we'll address that.
Just a quick one, sir. If you renovate, does NHPRC take renovations?
No.
Your building plan has to be submitted to the municipality,
uh-huh.
and the municipality then has to also ensure that there's inspection.
Uh-huh.
And if you take a loan for a renovation, then your bank inspectors also have to come through.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's one of the things that you know, if you get in a loan for a renovation, then I think the banks do then say any renovations. You must have a registered contractor with the NHPRC.
You see, sorry, just a comment. You know, Honorable Tao, you raise another question which is very, very necessary for us to ask. Because if you refer in one of our team, this constituency mix, one of the areas in the former one day related to serious problems in some of the purchase of the houses. By the same, the municipality said, the descendants have said that we don't know these houses, they brought in by human settlement. So nobody is able to account correctly that who owns those particular houses. If you said, municipality, it's you who was opening this project, you were catching the red people. He said, no, it's not us, it's human settlement. Go to human settlement, this, you know. But we still come to that one. I want to open discussion. I think it's very relevant. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Chair, thank you very much. Let me put a clarity on the budget issue as far as rectification is concerned. The most important thing for members to note is that the budget for rectification is sitting at provinces. That's number one. And why are we saying it's sitting at provinces? Because in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, the National Department of Human Settlements does not keep the capital budget. The capital budget, in the form of the Human Settlement Development Grant, is transferred to the provinces. Now, the rectification program is part of the program that is dealt with by the provinces and is in the business plan. Now, what we do, we devolve the money to the provinces in line with the DORA Act. Why we say it's a national program? We took it over in the form of us project managing the project. Just so that the national department gets a sense of how many houses have been rectified and to what degree they have been rectified. Just so that we do not actually miss or have any looping within the framework of the ratification program. However, the provinces are responsible as developers, as DG Shangani indicated, and some of the municipalities, of course. They do the ratification themselves. But the national department does not have the budget for ratification. The only budget that we have is the operational budget, which we are using as a department, and we have already done that to beef up the project management unit that is led by the DPG with the Shangani, who is collating the information as he has indicated that our colleague at Eastern Cape at this point in time is mostly the province that has budgeted or put aside 10% of their allocation that have been given in this financial year for the ratification program, while other provinces, depending on the amount of work that is needed within the programs to be rectified in that particular province, would be rectified. So we call it a national program because we want to own it as a sector, regardless of whether it's at Eastern Cape or Limpopo. But I must also indicate that when we transfer money, we also transfer the same amount allocation to the accredited municipalities should they get level 3 accreditation. Then the ratification of those houses, if the project still continues, will be borne by the municipalities themselves. Chair, does that clarify?
That's the last question for myself. So the performance about the provincial performance, I mean, there was a question that you raised about how provinces have performed.
heard it from the horse's mouth that she, they are going to leave us very soon. To the new deployment. And I think it's proper to thank you once more about your service within the department. In particular with me as the chair, and on behalf of the committee, as well. Most of us, we knew when it started with this department, interacted with this department since 2009. But the efforts which you have done, it was nevertheless, we didn't make every mistake, we noticed every contribution which you have contributed to us. And then wish you good luck with your new department, and hoping and trusting that where you are going to in the Ebuleni municipality. That's why I was emphasizing the issue of interacting, because we don't want you to miss that experience. We'll continuously interacting with you. But also, on the behalf of the committee, please don't shut yourself off, because members, most of the time, if we are having experience or people are experiencing some challenges, we normally used to call some of the DDGs and the DGs to say, come and help us with this and this and this. Thank you very much. Thank you very much once more. Mama Mabicha.
I believe that sometimes curiosity does not kill the cat. You must be ready. To do what?
We always differ. We've got the same goal at the end of the day. But we give there, we differ.
You
agree with me? I don't know. Everyone is attacking me these days. What am I doing wrong?
You are exposing yourself to be attacked.
No, but I'm right. I've got a point. I've got a point.
Page 1.
same G. Same G. Is it right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's associated.
No, yeah, you can still open.
So, it's okay.
Yeah. Oh,
you
can still
go to page 2. Page 2. Babulezan.
Chair, page 2, correction. Zatim Lenzana, Wagon Lake. An apology.
Yeah.
Was not private. Wagon Lake.
Church. Okay. Page 3. Wagon Lenzana.
Chair, that out of curiosity, 2.8. The IFP would not have, but they said when on page 2 they have registered an apology. Something has to be clarified.
No, we need to correct that one. The mistake is on page 2. Ubabu Uzulu was present in that meeting. Ubabu was present. Maybe the apology that he will be joining us late, but you shouldn't stand like this. You are correct, Baba. Alright, let's go to page 3. Page 3.
What's that?
Tell me. Let's move for the adoption of the minutes. Babu Krumlevalt, move for adoption. Any seconder?
One second.
Honorable Member Mapicha. Amendment, with amendment. Adopted with amendment.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes.
I am putting this one on record. Very formally so. That the management committee must come back to us with basic reasons as to why this unfortunate comment in the opening remarks by the chairperson here. Because Parliament has been misled in the course of events by this committee. And therefore, Chair, formally, a suggestion that the management committee should go look into this
and come back to us with the FPK.
The contradiction in the minutes of the 14th of May and the minutes of the 21st of May. If this committee was honest, Chairperson, there was no need for you allowing the situation that the issues which were dealt with thoroughly in the meeting of the 14th are reversed, rescinded, and rediscussed in the meeting of the 21st. When the same person who seconded the motion and then therefore the meeting adopted such a motion is the one who reversed the decision. I am not opening a debate here, but I'm saying I am mandating the management committee to go